Retirement Weekly, episode number 48. I am your host, Dr. Bakeman, and with me today is...
April.
And today we're going to talk about the top 10 box office films of the weekend.
December the 18th is what he meant to say.
Portuguese.
Portuguese.
It's Portuguese. I got tongue tied. That's Italian. I'm warming up my lips.
Okay, that's made it now.
No matter what we say today, it's going to be ousted by the fact that on the way of picking up some paraphernalia for this podcast, we ran into Malin Ackerman, that Silk Spectre from Watchmen.
Where'd you run into her at?
At the 7-Eleven.
Really? The one in Burbank, California?
In Burbank, California.
On the corner of Victory and Olive?
On the corner of Victory and Olive.
Yes. I made her laugh and giggle, and that was it. I got nothing from there on. Part of me wanted to say, "Why are you naked in all your films?" But it didn't get that far.
She didn't get naked in her last film.
Half naked.
Okay, well, everyone got half naked in that film.
I got half naked.
Couples Retreat, by the way.
I got half naked in the theater. I didn't see it.
So number one this week was Spike Jonze's new film, Where the Wild Things Are. Brought in $32.4 million. It's a pretty good take for a film that has been getting a lot of hype. Online, anyway. I didn't know how big it would go but with a regular moviegoer audiences that don't really read the internet.
Yeah, I mean, they posted posters and pictures everywhere on bench ads and on buses. So
here,
it's out there.
But in L.A. and New York, so who knows what kind of marketing they're doing.
In Texas?
Yeah.
So I haven't read much. Well, I
have never. You read the book, Where the Wild Things Are?
Yeah.
Maurice Sendak.
All two
no,
pages?
No, but I'm talking about what has been the response critically and from audiences.
A little mixed, right?
Yeah, it's been mixed. There's been some good reviews. There's been some bad reviews. Personally, I enjoyed it. I loved the movie. I liked how it made me feel inside, like all kid-like.
In your review, it gave you the warm fuzzies?
It did. It gave me the warm fuzzies. There were some dark moments.
There were some... There's some pretty dark.
But what kid doesn't go through dark moments like that?
I just felt...
Casper the Friendly Ghost?
There are moments in a film where you feel afraid for the character. You do not know what's going to happen.
You know, I never feared for the character Max. Not once did I fear for his life for the fact that it's in his imagination.
He didn't say he feared for his life.
Well...
They don't know if it's his imagination in this one.
That's
He goes on an actual journey.
He does go on. You're right.
That's
one
of the things they change.
He does go on an actual journey.
In the book, his room transforms. In the movie, he actually goes on a boat and sails. He does some sailing.
He does do some sailing.
But yeah, I love the movie.
I still take in the context of the book, though, that was his imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole concept of the book.
Yeah, but there are definitely some dark moments in it.
Well, let's talk about her feelings then, shall we? I'll be a psychiatrist for the day after I am a doctor.
So do they add any more characters to the original story, or are there extra fuzzy-wuzzy bear things?
Well, they give names and personalities to all the different wild things.
They
very
do.
Distinct personalities. It's very cool to see.
I liked what they did, because in the book you don't get a... I mean, the book's only like 10 pages long. You get...
Yeah.
No sense of any of the characters, really, who they are, their personalities, nothing like that. So they had to invent all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I love the characters that they brought in to these wild things.
As real and as genuinely kid-like, obviously, that Max was like. I think the opening act of the film does a very good job of establishing how it makes you feel, and it makes you kind of very nostalgic for moments when you were a kid, the way you thought when you were a kid, it captures very well.
I agree.
Well, something else is you can kind of... Max is a lonely kid.
He is.
Yeah.
He's a lonely kid, and this is why his imagination takes him off.
He's a poor little loner, you know? He's got his sister, who, you know, his big sister. Different than the book. You know, just kind of ignores him. You know, rather be with her friends and playing with her brother Max. Mom, obviously, is... dating another guy.
Well,
you know,
in the book, you don't even actually see her. You don't actually see. She's just kind of this disembodied voice.
Yeah. So yeah, in this, you get a look into Max's life.
Yeah.
No. What I liked about this is it didn't try to dumb down emotions for kids. It didn't try to sugarcoat things. I mean, you say it's darker, but it's like, well, that's what people are like.
Yeah.
And they just gave actual human personalities to monsters.
Yeah. Well, the monsters themselves were more childlike. were all childlike as well. I mean, they weren't mentors or... I guess...
They're very easily persuaded by everything kind of going on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And their emotions could really turn on a dime as well. But I loved James Gandolfini's performance. For me, my favorite, though, is Paul Dano.
Yeah, I agree. Paul Dano was great.
Catherine O'Hara, her voice.
And, you know, the child performance from Max Records.
Dude, amazing, right?
You didn't feel like he was... I think I read one review on Wired. Talked about how he doesn't fall for the usual child actor traps of mugging for the camera.
Yeah.
His performance is a lot less, which is...
Well, and that's what made it so good. I mean, in my review, I said it was definitely one... I think it was one of the best performances of the year by anybody. Because he did such a good job playing the role of Max. I mean, I know he's playing a kid, and he is a kid. But to have the emotion that he had behind those eyes, interacting with these creatures and stuff... It's not easy for a kid. I wouldn't think that would be easy for any kid to do.
He brought
that emotion intensity to the screen of what it is like to be a kid.
Is it interesting that he's 12 years old, but I felt like his character might have been 8 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he first auditioned when he was 9, probably started filming when he was 10 or 11.
Yeah.
But me and Venkman were talking about this after we saw The Road. We're talking about, like, child performances. The fact that you only see one really good standout child performance every decade or so. We talked about Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun. We talked about Dakota Fanning in I Am Sam. And I think Max Records' performance, you know, not as emotional as that, but just as a debut for an actor in a starring role, I think it was amazing. But yeah, his performance in it was great.
Agreed.
In Venkman's review, he talked about his eyes, and he does have this very Elijah Wood type.
It's like an innocence. There's just like this innocence.
Well, there's an honesty in his face.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly it. It's that's something you just can't make up. And he was talking about The Road, Cody Smith McPhee, I think his name is. He did a fine job in The Road, but he was the one character in there that kind of pulled you out every once in a while.
Yeah.
Because his acting, you know, because he is a kid and he's still learning and learning the ropes, but as an actor...
It basically all falls on the director, how the director is able to get the performances out of these kids.
I've been thinking about it more, and with each of those monsters, I don't know if you've given this any thought, but do these creatures, do they represent people in Max's life, do you think?
Not that I see. I don't think they represent... I mean, maybe...
Because I saw a little bit of mother-like stuff in there. I saw a little bit of sister stuff.
You saw what could have been Max's father.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
But it may have been his own mental translation of how things happened or were.
Yeah. Because there was that one scene in the movie that I kind of connected with the end. There's a scene in the movie where Max, when they're in the big pile of sleepiness, you know, and Max is laying down, he's having a conversation with KW, and there's this look that each of them are kind of giving each other as they're talking and stuff. At the end of the movie, I noticed...
The same look.
There's the same look that Max and his mother had while Max was eating his food, and his mom was just kind of falling asleep watching him eat, you know?
Yeah.
It was that same kind of... Very looking chemistry, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. I'm just kind of throwing things out there.
It could be. That's a very good observation.
Yeah, so Where the Wild Things Are, great movie.
Great movie.
I highly recommend
one
it.
One of the things we didn't talk about is how some of the stuff they went practical on is insane. Like the stuff Spike Jonze, even in all his commercials and all his other films, the stuff he does practical and how perfectly he blends the CG elements, like just with the creatures, with the
wild
you
don't
things.
Even think about it.
Yeah,
you don't feel the artificial facing on those characters.
It's exactly. Seamless.
You don't know if someone's running it until you see a larger expression.
Yeah,
yeah.
And even then, the stuff that you know is CG, it doesn't look like it at all.
Exactly.
What's weird is they were gonna have it all animatronic, but it was so heavy that the actors in the suits couldn't walk around well enough with all that
technology.
Yeah, like the 50 pounds in the head, so they took it out. And I think that if it had to be animatronic, I think it would have felt dated and you wouldn't have gotten nearly as expressive of performances out of these characters in which they were able to with doing it CG.
Yeah.
So yeah, very seamless. The set design and the cinematography is amazing.
Yeah. Great movie. Number two this week is a little film called Law Abiding Citizen.
A little film with some big actors.
A little film with some big actors. It's got...
Well, can we start by saying none of us have seen this film?
I know, right?
No one, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm... No one here has seen the film yet.
Is anyone here interested in watching Law Abiding Citizen? And what's the reason why?
It just doesn't look like one of those films that I need to go rush out and see.
Well, it stars Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler. It is about a bereaved father seeking revenge on the killers and the justice system, which let one of the murderers of his wife and kid go.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, I don't know, I've seen this movie before.
So it's basically Punisher, though.
I don't know if you've seen Yeah, Punisher, Death Sentence.
Yeah, but the idea is that
he does it from inside a jail cell. He orchestrates all these things from inside his cell.
Which is where it gets into a weird... Because there's a lot of leaps you have to make in a movie. And usually you get one leap, and that's kind of it. This movie requires you to make multiple leaps. And the second leap is he's actually the brain to a covert black ops. And that's the reason he's able to orchestrate these things so perfectly.
Well, all the killing, all the revenge takes place 10 years after the murder. So maybe he did this within the 10 years, or maybe he was that all along.
So he's been stewing over this for a long time.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know because we haven't seen it. So if you've seen it, let us know how it is.
Yeah. For me, the reason I don't want to see it, it's, you know, like Venkman said, is, you know, something we've kind of seen already. But for me, it's Jamie Foxx in his ruffled eyebrow, serious face the entire movie. Yeah, and I can't stand that.
I'm not a big Jamie Foxx fan. I feel like... I got to be honest.
Yeah. He's great in Collateral. He's had the same mug face, serious expression since, like, Miami Vice.
Yeah. Great. Since he won the Oscar, he won't get rid of the face. It was an ensemble cast, though. He wasn't, like, the main star.
Was his performance the same?
His performance, yeah. It was Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
Yeah, but military style.
Which is interesting because previous to him being a Oscar-winning actor, he was known for being able to transform himself.
Yeah.
Now he's just Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, exactly. Now he's taking himself way too seriously.
Yeah, he did all right in The Soloist. It wasn't, you know, anywhere near Ray, but yeah, he doesn't seem like he has it anymore, or he seems too confident in his own skills that he doesn't break himself down for each role to really develop these characters. And that's what Law Abiding Citizen kind of looks like. It just looks like Jamie Foxx being Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler. And I don't know, just the torture porn aspect of what we've seen in the trailers doesn't get us into that film either.
You mentioned that he was produced by Butler?
It was his first producing gig.
Which we congratulate him on. And we love Gerard Butler. Yeah. But not enough to go see Jamie Foxx in one of his movies.
Now, I don't know. He's got a few films coming out.
Due Date looks really funny because he's doing that with Zach Galifianakis. And that's directed by Todd Phillips. And that looks like a very cool movie.
Number three this week, Paranormal Activity, made $20 million.
An increase of 155%.
Well, they just opened
it up. It went wide release. It went wide release, so it's only, you know, with all the hype that is surrounding the film, we knew it was going to make a buttload of money. But here we have an $11,000 film that's made so far has made $33.7 million in the box office.
And it'll keep making more, too, because there's a lot more buzz. Like, it's become like a perpetual, like a snowball effect. There's a lot more buzz about it now after people have seen it.
So
I don't think it's going to roll out in any more theaters.
I think this is as wide as it's going to go. This is its release, but I think more people are going to go watch it, because I still know...
And I know people are seeing it again. They're taking their friends to it. Not to watch the movie, but to watch their friends get the crap scared out of them. So
you know what's funny is they were actually talking about the budget of this film on Kevin and Bean this morning. Ralph Garman said to Kevin Smith, "Oh, they could have made, you know, $11,000. They could have made 3 or 4 Clerks with that money." And Kevin Smith's like, no, Clerks cost $27,000, and that was back in the '90s. He's like, these guys took a micro budget, a budget even smaller than Clerks, and made it way better and made way more money than Clerks ever will or ever.
It's all due to Paramount's marketing campaign for the film.
Oh yeah,
they did a great job doing it. Without the way that they marketed it, this movie would not have been so big. Had they remade the film like they originally were going to do, and they bought the rights to this movie, it wouldn't have made as much money.
I bet they're thinking they're lucky stars. Whoever decided, no.
I know, yeah. Right? I mean. Crap, it's amazing that this thing may have never seen the light of day.
Yep.
There is a chance that this movie would have never come out.
Which makes me sad for a movie like Trick or Treat, which had given the right marketing, could have flourished, especially in the month of October, could have flourished.
It was a perfect Halloween movie. Mm-hmm. Perfect Halloween movie to open up in the month of October. I think it would have done just as good as Paranormal Activity. Yeah.
But we have Paranormal Activity, have Vampire's Assistant.
Yeah, and Saw 6.
And Saw 6.
Yay, Saw 6.
So do you think maybe they moved out of that? It's going, how are we going to compete with another Saw?
Saw is a dying franchise.
Wait, yeah. Once you hit 6.
The fact that they've
done 6 could say the contrary.
But the thing is they spend very little money on it. And it makes more than what they spend on it.
Oh, yeah.
So they're making a profit off each movie. But each movie is progressively not making as much in the box office.
I'm just amazed that none of these are, they don't have some weird spin-off that are going direct to DVD. I'm glad they're just keeping it Saw. Because they could do what American Pie does and just put off all these weird little...
Like Jigsaw Spring Break?
Jigsaw Spring Break.
Jigsaw, the Naked Mile.
Yeah, there's a bit of a drop. Saw 4 did... I think it was probably their biggest one, which did $63 million.
Yeah.
But Saw 5 dropped down to 56. Not a crazy drop.
No, I mean, they made a profit off it, so they'll keep making them. As long as they're making money, they'll keep making them. I mean, they've already got 7 and 8 planned.
Well, 7 and 7's supposed to be in 3D.
7's going to be in 3D, so...
Actually, no, I stand corrected. Saw 3 did 80.
Another good thing about Paranormal Activity, as Venkman pointed out, a lot of people are taking their friends back to see it. I heard a lot of people saying when they took their friends back the second time, they were watching it and they were laughing a lot more. Because they were over getting scared, and it was just a comedy to them. And then they turn and look at their friends getting scared. So their friends getting scared, they're laughing, so it's a comedy, scary movie. Go see it twice.
There's a lot of emotions wrapped up into the movie. Okay, so number 4 this week, Couples Retreat brought in $17.9 million. And number 5 in its first week opening, we have... The Stepfather. And that's about evil stepfathers that tried to kill their wives and children in the middle of the night with neckties.
And some guy from Gossip Girl.
And some guy from Gossip Girl. And the guy from Nip Tuck. Dylan Walsh. Anyway.
I predict in 3 weeks it'll be off the top 10.
I predict your prediction.
Okay.
If not sooner.
How can you predict his prediction when you said it after you said it?
That's the magic. Of predicting predictions.
He wrote it down in an envelope so that when I gave my prediction, he opened his envelope and there was his prediction.
Like the guys from Lost at Comic-Con?
Yes. Only better.
And it turned out to be the last episode of Heroes?
Yes. Okay, anyway. I have not seen Stepfather. I have no desire to see Stepfather. It's a remake of one of those classic 80 horror slasher films. Anybody? No?
No.
All right, so number 6 this week was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. At $8.1 million.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting they just added like 45 theaters after dropping 30%. Zombieland, same thing.
Zombieland went 133 theaters. That's a huge drop for Zombieland, which is in number 7.
Well, Zombieland's been out in the theaters for, what, 3 weeks now? So.
It went from number 2, though, to number 7. And only 3 films were new.
It made $7.8 million this weekend. So far, it's made $60.8 million. In its box office run. Anyway, number 8 at the box office was the Toy Story and Toy Story 2.
Which they kept
re-release.
An extra week.
Yep.
At least.
Yeah.
Probably not another week.
I've got to see that. It's counting down. It's getting down to the wire. I got to see that.
Is it still out?
Yeah, it's still out. You can still see
that.
It
was only the second week, so it's going to be extended now.
So it's got a...
I watched it during the second week. This is the third week now.
It's in the third week, but I mean, there's only been 2 weekends. When we first talked about it...
This is the start of the third week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I still have another week to see it. And so do you, audience.
Number 9.
I broke the fourth wall.
You did broke the fourth wall.
You did broke it.
You did broke it.
You did broke it, yo.
You went and gone broke the fourth wall.
Now we're in Alabama.
Okay. Number 9 this week was Surrogates, with the Bruce Willis movie that none of us still haven't seen and probably won't see until it's on DVD.
Bruce Willis done chased robots in that film.
I don't think I'm going to watch it on DVD. I don't think I'd spend money on it.
I don't even look at the posters.
HBO.
As if they're not there, I just glance by.
When you're driving, you're all, shield your eyes! Children! Surrogates poster!
I actually like the Surrogates posters.
I've heard...
Wait. So, you like it, but you hate the Calvin Klein ads and stuff like that.
Because this is kind of making fun of the Calvin Klein ads. That's what I like about it.
It's not making fun of the Calvin Klein ads at all.
It's
It kind of is, in a way.
No, it basically is it with little robot things. It's riding off the Calvin Klein ads back. That's what it is.
Yeah, but that's kind of something I like about it. It's like, it has this weird artistic vibe to it.
It's like, you like Calvin Klein if he was artistic?
If he was less narrow-minded.
You know him?
He's a jerk, man.
Well, are you saying Calvin Klein is a racist?
Okay.
Yeah.
He hates everyone of the human race equally.
Oh. So,
racist. Hence surrogates.
So, surrogates. We were talking, Perlman and I were talking to someone last night that saw it, and he said there were a couple good moments in the film, but that was it. Right?
Two.
That's what
a couple means. There's a couple good moments. there were two all right scenes.
So if you're willing to go out and spend money on watching a movie with a couple good scenes.
If you're desperate to see two good scenes.
But chances are, since the movie's only made $36 million in its fourth week, you probably haven't seen it. You probably won't see it.
I'm fiending for some good scenes, man. You got some good scenes?
And number 10 this week was The Line of Invention.
The invention of lying.
The invention of lying.
The lying of invention. I'm keeping that in.
Topsy-turvy.
Nobody's ever invented anything. It was a lie.
The lying of invention.
Shit. You know what? The invention of lying sounds like a cool comedy. The lying of invention sounds like something on the BBC. Yes. You know? The lying of invention.
The invention of lying.
Starring Kate Winslet.
Meryl Streep.
Kate Winslet, Meryl
Those
Streep.
Patents were mine. No, you're lying. That's my invention.
And Jamie Foxx.
No. Jamie Foxx is not in that movie. It's Daniel Day-Lewis as the inventor.
That was the top 10.
Yeah, so that was the top 10.
So I saw a movie that's not necessarily a box office film, but it's a movie that many geeks are looking forward to, and that's Battlestar Galactica, The Plan.
That's just not out yet?
It's not out yet. I actually got into a secret private screening that was
secret
held.
Private screening.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yes, I didn't sign anything.
Good.
All right, good.
It was actually held for many of the post production people that worked on the film, and it was hosted by Edward James Olmos. That was pretty cool.
Welcome to Battlestar Galactica.
He sat three seats from me.
What's up? I'm going to sit three seats behind you, and in front of you at the same time.
So, yeah, no, it was a good movie. What the story is it provides like the Cylon point of view of the attack on the colonies and some stuff after the attack.
Well, so have they found a way to make planning interesting?
Well, it's
we should build it around here. We should dig one of them things around here. Yeah. Then we get fired up.
There's this great montage of people filling out forms. Like, what's it?
It wasn't anything like that.
No, that's why he's asking.
That's what I'm asking. Is like,
yeah, I think The Plan is actually kind of an inaccurate title for the film.
Question: is it like basically like the starting parts of a heist film, except there's no heist?
That is a good point.
Nothing like that. In a heist film, they
do their research, they do their planning. And then they execute.
No, okay.
And it's got some piano song going. Doom, ba-doom,
ba-doom, doom, okay. Doom. For those of you who have seen the Battlestar Galactica series, you know that the entire show almost the entire show follows a human point of view of every of the events going on.
It's the only point of view.
What they did in this film is they showed the Cylon.
So this is during I guess what would be the miniseries.
Well, the movie starts like a day before the miniseries starts, so you don't actually see them planning the attack, but you kind of see some of what they're doing behind the scenes.
Starts at the first day, but when does it end in timeline?
It ends actually when at the end of season 3, but right before
season 4.
No, actually, I'm wrong. It ends right before they go to New Caprica, okay. So it ends right at the end of season 2, I should say.
Yeah,
but before that. You know, in the season finale of season 2, they have that time jump.
Yeah.
Where it jumps a year.
Nope.
It's right before that part.
Okay.
So you don't see anything about New Caprica or anything that happens after that. You just see it up until that point. But it shows a lot of the stuff that happened in the miniseries in the first and second season.
Is there a lot of like Back to the Future moments? Like, oh, that was in the miniseries.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually a lot of that. A lot of that. And they cut a lot of the footage from like actual footage that they used before. And they used unused dailies. so unused takes and camera angles that they shot like 6 years ago, but they never used it, and they put it into this, and they reshot some stuff.
Was there a scene where a guy's on the telephone is going, hey, Charles! Charles Berry! It's your cousin! John Berry!
They did, but it was with Jimi Hendrix.
You know that attack you want to do?
you know that new attack you want to do?
That new attack you've been wanting to do?
The new attack you wanted to plan out?
Listen to this!
You know that new attack you've been looking for?
Listen to this! Listen to this!
It's one of the more cheesy parts of Back to the Future. Yeah. Okay, all right. So, great film.
It was good. I mean,
what was the length? Is it an hour and a half? 2 hours?
Put your the hell out of that quote.
What?
I said we butchered the hell out of
it. Yeah, we did.
You guys need to see that movie again.
No, I think Venkman got it at the end. Well, listen to this.
Okay, back to the plan. Is it really short?
No. Actually, it was pretty long. Actually, it was about 2 hours, but all the scenes were really fast because it gives you like.
It's a good flow, good movement.
It's a good flow. Pacing. It's very fast.
Good pacing.
It's very fast paced. Gives you a lot of
just dense.
It's very dense.
Almost, he directed. Did he direct any of the episodes?
He directed some of the episodes in the series.
But this one is all his.
When does this come out?
The DVD should be coming out. It's going straight to DVD, and it should be out either this week or next week.
And they're showing it on the Sci-Fi Channel.
And they're going to show it. Yeah,
does it come out on DVD before the Sci-Fi Channel premieres?
I think it's
it?
Like the same time. About the same time. Okay. It's like the same week.
All right. So I'm just going to watch it on the Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah.
You know, we should talk about some TV. Shows have started.
They have?
Yeah, that's right.
Really? How much time
have we got? What started? We've got Community, which we've never talked about on
that's
the podcast.
That's true.
Flash Forward.
I'm not following it.
Stargate Universe?
Yeah.
I'm following.
Cougar Town?
Smallville.
Let's talk about Glee then.
Awful.
Stargate Vampire Diaries? Stargate Universe.
It's actually not that bad.
No, Stargate Universe.
who's been
on the download?
I haven't been following that, but it looks really, really good. I think Mr. Black and Maze have both been following that. You guys talk about that?
Stargate Universe? We haven't talked about it, but we should.
Oh, I like it. It's as far as the effects go and the whole feel of it, it's got a better polish to it. Have they moved it out of production in Canada? Or is it here in Los Angeles?
I think it's still in Canada. What they did is they reformatted the way they've done the Stargate series before. So they've done it. It's all pretty much handheld now.
Well, the Stargate, it got kind of cheesy.
It got very cheesy, and that was what they wanted to stray away from. And in this, it's got... The funniest part is it's got the entire same production staff that the other two Stargate series had. But
there's only two other ones? I thought there was like a buttload of Stargate.
There's only two series. There was a cartoon series that was not connected.
Okay.
And then the movie, the original movie.
That cartoon series is bizarre.
It has nothing to do with...
Anyway,
Stargate Toontown is just a horrible name. So.
but the show, I mean, if you're a fan of Lost, then I think you'd be a fan of this.
Well,
show.
I think it has a survival aspect of Lost. It's got some of the stuff from Battlestar. It's got all that handheld camera work, and then they have something interesting in the show.
There's these
floating camera things that they have. They're tied to the ship. And people are talking into the camera.
Yeah.
And recording stuff.
Is it kind of like a reality show? Like they're keeping logs? Or kind of like Sunshine?
Depending on...
Yeah, it's a lot more like Sunshine. The idea is that they're lost on this spaceship that is basically flying itself. It's an ancient ship.
They're lost in space.
Yes, they're lost in space and they have a mad scientist leading the way.
Which is actually true. They do have a mad scientist kind of legion.
Which is interesting. I love the...
I knew he was going to do that.
The character dynamic of the character Rush, who's this conflicted character. He's a genius, but he's also a bit of a nutter.
He's a narcissist. He's like... He's one of these kind of people that thinks he's the most important person.
And then you have another character who's kind of like...
I know Brett Ryan was on the show.
Yeah. And yeah, Michael Bay.
Which is interesting. You have this other character who controls these flying things. I don't know. I feel like they've mixed a little bit of Cloverfield in with the...
He's basically... Yeah, that character is basically the comic relief of the show. but at the same time, it's very easy for that character to become obnoxious.
I know, Brian.
I forgot. What's his character? That character's name?
His character is Eli.
Eli.
So, no, but I think the show is. I think it's good for any Stargate, Galactica, and Lost fan because it kind of mixes all three of those together in a really great way.
Now, let me ask you
way.
This: Do you have to have seen the other Stargate
that's
series?
What's great. I think that's what's great about this.
To be able to like. Or would you be lost coming
here's,
into
Here's it? How they did it. They did
Pun
it.
Pun intended.
Yes, I know. They did it in a way where this show...
The show kind of goes from the perspective of the character Eli, who is
yeah,
new
who's new.
It.
The show is its own show. It's its own story, but it has a lot of background that Stargate fans will pick up on. But if you've never... If you don't know anything,
so for anyone
you're fine.
There's a Stargate game that would come out sometime in the future, an MMO. And Stargate Worlds. And imagine if someone playing Stargate Worlds beat the game and Stargate was real and they took that the person who beat the game and brought him into the actual Stargate universe. That's literally what happens.
Wait, so you're saying that when if you beat Stargate Worlds, you will go into the Stargate universe live?
They will beam you up, yes.
Yeah, that's what happens to the.
That's what happens in the first episode of the show.
It's totally real.
Well, if the game ever comes out, there's your incentive to buy.
So I think it's a great show for all sci-fi fans, especially if you're looking for the sci-fi that's not the campy, cheesy sci-fi.
You don't have to give it that much time to get hooked into it. You just gotta watch 30 minutes of it. You can already feel the way the show's
going. Very cool. So
highly recommend it.
Probably start talking about the block of NBC shows on Thursday nights, which is just this. Great couple hours of comedy. It starts off with Community, goes into Parks and Recreation, The Office, and then 30 Rock.
And then some other show, which we don't watch.
What other show?
Jay Leno?
Yeah.
I'll talk about the 2-hour block, not the 3-hour block.
Yeah. Yeah, Community. I love Community.
I'm not sold on Community yet. I'm watching it, and I've watched every episode so far, but I'm not 100% like convinced it's a good show yet.
I think
it has moments. It has a lot of great moments, but it's not. I wouldn't say it's a great show. It's a good show.
I think there's the rhythm of it and how much it references other movies and other things. You kind of have to know these other movies they're referencing or know about these actors that they're referencing in order to kind of get into the comedy of it. It's kind of like Family Guy. If you don't know these references, some people might not get the humor. So.
Yeah, same thing with The Simpsons.
Simpsons, exactly. Parks and Recreation, that's been, I don't know, like...
I'm mixed on that show. I liked it, and then now it's just kind of flat to me.
I'm loving every episode I see.
Really?
Like, I'll often go, like, there's been a couple Thursdays where I'm like, dude, Parks and Recreation was the funniest show that night.
Really?
It's so funny, yeah. I think I'm invested in every character. I think
I am completely opposite of that.
I'm the opposite too.
Whenever I see an episode, it is like to me, it's just one of the blandest, most boring shows.
I don't know. It's like the storyline they're going with Louis C.K. and Amy Poehler is really funny. Aziz Ansari, I think his character is just really, really funny. It's definitely a lot sillier than The Office, even though it's in the same kind of format. But I don't know. I think it's really funny.
Well, just a show format is not going to be the same as the. Flavor of comedy you're gonna get out of it.
Yeah.
For me, I like the characters, they're unlikable to me, and I can't watch something where I don't like people. I mean, yeah. If I find characters annoying, like I think The Office has a couple characters that are annoying, but they get reeled in with all the other characters. And for me, Parks and Recreation, everyone's weird, and there doesn't really seem to be someone who's just kind of.
I think it's not necessarily fair to compare the two shows. The Office.
Why not same creators? Same, you know.
But I mean,
it's fair, but I mean, it's maybe not. They're very different shows.
Because in The Office, yes, you have a lot of annoying characters, but you also have like a couple of characters that are the heart of the show, like Pam and Jim dynamic. I don't see that on Parks and Recreation. There's nothing like that. That kind of.
Well, they
grounds the show. I mean, it's just everybody's just kind of.
That's what makes The Office The Office too. Same thing with the British version, the original version of The Office. That was one of the main storylines in it, and they kind of have to find their own footing with Parks and Recreation to kind of distance itself from that as well. I think.
I get that, but at the same time, there's like no characters on Parks and Recreation that I really care about, that I really want to see again.
But I'm gonna keep watching. I find it's for me, it's funny enough that I'm going to keep watching. If I miss an episode, I'm not going to feel bad and go back for it, but I will keep watching it when I watch, you know, it's in between Community and Office, so I'm not going to miss it.
The Office has been good.
Yeah, I'm surprised. The writing has not slacked. Everything is still funny.
The last episode was the wedding episode, right?
Yeah.
The last episode was...
Oh, no, yeah.
The one after the wedding.
Yeah, it was after the wedding.
Pam and Jim are on their honeymoon, and it's the mafia, quote-unquote, episode.
That was just so funny and just so uncomfortable through every scene. It was great.
I just love that. Did anyone else see the last 30 Rock with Alec Baldwin at the end, basically giving a pitch over to the Jay Leno show?
Well, you gotta remember, though, too. I didn't see the entire episode at a takeoff, but the beginning
was
awesome. Alec Baldwin looking right at you, you know, looking right at the audience and going, "Hi, welcome to the fourth season. I've told you guys all about this." And then the camera turns around, and then he's talking about, "This is a great restaurant." He's talking about a restaurant. So you gotta also keep that in mind.
Yeah, but then at the end, it was weird because he's...
They didn't have any recovery.
Had this country music thing, and then it goes from that, and it goes into the Jay Leno show, and then, like, literally Jay Leno's, like, at the end, like, "Let's give them what they want." And I was like, this is the weirdest pitch from NBC I've ever seen. Trying to tie these shows, it was awkward as hell to me.
I think the best that anybody does that is, like, when they do the Daily Show and the Colbert Report.
It's news too. You're allowed to do that because they do that in real news anyway as well.
Yeah, and it's not like
it's not a sitcom where you're in this world. You know, you're just reporting something. But yeah, like if you're in 30 Rock, if you're watching a sitcom and you're supposed to be sucked in, to have that will really take you out of the show.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure there was an executive out there and just like, it's gonna be good. We're gonna tie it together, and people are gonna just coast right into the Jay Leno show.
Because ratings have dropped for all shows since Jay's been in.
Really?
Yeah, for all shows in that kind of time, they've all had a ratings drop.
In competing with Jay Leno.
Not competing with Jay Leno. The NBC shows have dropped their
He's
ratings.
On NBC.
So all the shows
leading into Jay Leno, their ratings have kind of have gone, and whenever they go to commercial for Jay Leno, ratings just drop
down.
Yeah,
he should. I get why NBC did it, a whole political thing, but like I think his comedies it's time, right?
Yeah,
but he still tours. He does a lot of stand up. I mean, there's people who...
I think what's so weird is the fact that it goes his show into half hour news into thing. If they maybe had the half hour news and then go into Jay, into Conan, that'd be an easier transition, because they have to transition from Jay Leno talk show into news, back into a talk show, and another talk show, and back into another talk show.
Yeah. And how's Conan doing? Do we know?
Letterman's kind of edging him out, but I think Conan still has the key demographic, the 18 to 40-something-year-old, 48-year-old, or whatever.
Love Conan.
I didn't get to see the whole thing, but you guys see Simpsons Treehouse of Horror?
Yes.
Yeah, saw it all.
Double XO.
Double X. This is number 20 of the Treehouse of Horror.
I caught the very end of it, and the animation on it, on my crappy TV, my crappy non-HD TV, looked amazing. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe this is the first HD Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah, well, they just started last season, and I think it was midway through.
As you know, the Treehouse of Horrors are always anthologies, and this one was three anthologies. The first one, I thought, was the best, which was based off of 28 Days Later.
Aren't they always anthologies? They usually are three.
Yeah, right? They're always anthologies. Yeah.
But there's always three because they always break it up by the commercial break.
Yeah, by the three acts.
Yeah.
The first one was 28 Days Later, kind of a thing where Kent Brockman eats a tainted Krusty Burger and becomes a zombie and then just starts chomping on people and everybody becomes zombies. And Bart, not to spoil it, but it's The Simpsons, so who cares? But Bart becomes like the cure for the zombie plague.
He's the chosen one.
So that's pretty cool.
Very funny.
The second anthology was all in black and white, done very film noir, which was really cool. Dial M for Murder. Not really a horror kind of a thing, but throwback to Hitchcock.
So is it a spoof of Hitchcock or just kind
of... Total spoof of Hitchcock.
It was total spoof of Hitchcock. They even had a Hitchcock in it, right? Yeah. They made fun of that. How Hitchcock is in like every one of his movies, they kind of made fun of that. And then the third story was one that I didn't think really fit. It was that weird, like, it was like a play.
It was a play. They were doing a horror story, but it was actually all a play. and they kind of worked off that.
When did they reveal that? Just kind of.
Instantly.
Okay. They have the curtains open.
Because that's when I saw, but I kind of just saw the last like minutes of it.
And yeah, so it's very obvious when you're watching that it's supposed to be spoofing a play.
It's a very cool design though, the way they did like the Moe's Tavern, yeah. And then when it opened up, it's kind of two sets, and you see Homer underneath, and you see Moe and Marge on top. Looked very cool.
Yeah, it was very artistically done. So that was cool. There was no new Family Guy, which kind of disappointed me.
Yes. Really old family. Like, how old was that family?
That was probably about a good six. I think that was last season.
Yeah.
Cleveland was pretty good. Nothing Halloween-y about it.
Cleveland, I like the fact that Jason Sudeikis is doing a couple voices on there. I like, he's from SNL. I like him on there a lot.
I would say Cleveland is actually perpetually getting a little better.
My name is Cleveland Brown. I have a family.
It started kind of slow, but it's been getting good.
Yeah. The characters are starting to... you know, be a little bit more developed and starting to understand them. And
Less annoying,
yeah.
I hope Cleveland Jr., I hope he starts talking a little bit faster. Like, whenever his character's kind of on screen, it gets a little slow.
That's really
funny. This last episode was kind of a...
It's centered around him.
It centered a lot around him, around Cleveland Jr.
Yeah, the other storyline, one of the storylines centered mostly on Cleveland Jr.
So, so that was pretty good. I just hope they don't make Cleveland Jr. back the way he was originally on Family Guy.
Yeah, no, well, they have a completely
different character.
It's a whole different actor doing it, but...
And a completely different character, too, really.
Yeah. The Cleveland Jr. on Family Guy, you know, when he was a kid, he was this thin, hyperactive guy, and now he's eaten his way into this kind of adorable, chubby kid.
Who talks really slow.
Lonely chubby kid, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of worried about the bear character, but which they kind of featured heavily on this one, but I like the bear character. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane as the bear.
Yeah. Yeah. They could totally have crashed and burned with that, but they pulled it out.
Yeah, I was very concerned about that too, but it seems to be working pretty decently. American Dad is about the same. Another show that I've been watching that honestly I haven't heard much buzz about, but I've been catching kind of out of just curiosity, what is The Forgotten, which is like a new spin off of the whole cop kind of TV shows that we've seen a billion times.
Talking about like CSI, stuff like that? Or kind of crime scene investigators, or more like Numbers, or more like...
It's actually kind of a mixture of all of those. And the premise is this. It takes place in Chicago, and there's this network of civilian volunteers, of regular people, that are called the Forgotten Network. And what they do is, when the police...
It's like unsolved mysteries.
No. What happens is, like, when the police cannot identify a victim, like mm-hmm. a body, and they've exhausted all options, they kind of put the case on hold. And what they do is they give it to the Forgotten Network. And the Forgotten Network's job is to go and, on their own time, because they're all volunteers, they don't get paid for it, but they all go and try to track down who this person is, so that way it can lead to adding some clues to what happened to this murder. So how they got killed. So the whole show, it stars Christian Slater.
It's good to see that the fact that he went to a whole new show after My Own Worst Enemy got quickly canceled on NBC.
And this show is actually way better than My Own Worst Enemy. He leads this specific Forgotten team. And it's like an entirely new take on the show. And the coolest thing about the show is it has a narration, but the narration is done by the victim.
Ah, that's cool.
So the person who dies and who they're trying to find... Mm-hmm. narrates the episode, so it does it slowly, like you don't know, that person doesn't like reveals very little about themselves, and as the characters in the show find out more about the victim, the narration adapts to that too. So.
Is it them talking about them discovering it as if it was a ghost talking about it, or is it just a person kind of explaining themselves or explaining how they got into that situation?
It's more of the person explaining themselves and their life.
Okay, so
as opposed to about the murder.
Okay.
So it's really, really well done. And it always ends, the last line of the show is always...
We're the A-team.
No. The last line of the show is always the victim, like, finally saying their name. And then, you know, it's a really well done show.
So we hear dead people.
You hear dead people.
Okay.
But it's not, you don't necessarily hear it like a ghost. It's more of like, it's like a narration.
I've been watching Fringe, and... I don't know if anyone else has been watching it.
I saw like the first two episodes and lost interest.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's kind of hard. You can't really judge a show by a couple episodes. You really gotta. Yeah.
I know, but usually, like within like an episode or two, I can find something that interests me. And for some reason, with Fringe, I had nothing for me. But I've been hearing a lot that a lot of people are loving the show. So
it's got your boy Leonard Nimoy in it.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
Second season, right, or third season?
Second season.
The whole thing is opened up into this crazy multi-universe war. And
so it's a continuing story now?
Oh, yeah. It's always been a continuing story for people who watch it.
Okay.
The first few episodes is the main character getting understanding what is happening for real in the world. Okay. After that, you begin to realize that everything that's in place is not by accident. Who she is, the doctor, his son, and all that. It's just really great. I'm interested to see where the show goes. It's one of those shows where it doesn't quite have cliffhangers because of the long-term storyline. You are invested in what's going on.
Okay. Is it, because I remember when the show started, it had a lot of comparisons to the X-Files.
It has some of those factors of the Freak of the Week or whatever, but not so much lately.
Because what the X-Files had is it had the continuing story, but it also had those episodes that had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, but I feel like the X-Files' overall continuing story just didn't make sense, and this one, as far out there as it is, does make sense.
So every episode is part of the ongoing story in this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And every Freak of the Week ties into what's going on, as opposed to just being, this thing on the side, plus our main storyline. No, it's all tied together. I mean, you've got, I think, okay, Abrams is an executive producer on it, so... I mean, it's not fully his, but there's a great team behind it.
So Smallville, new season of Smallville, how's that been going?
It's exciting because it's about as close as you can be to having a Superman TV show without him being Superman.
That's exactly what the show is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he's not Superman.
He's not Superman.
Yes, I'm saying it's
as close as you're going to be able to get. If they make it...
It's the final season, right?
I'm not sure. Isn't it the final season?
I don't think they've announced it being the final season.
I think everybody just
thinks it is because it's like season 9.
It's also they've pushed it so far and they've stretched things out so far that it's like
are they allowed to take it to have him in the suit?
The thing is,
as far as I know,
legally,
between the actor Tom Welling and the original producers, the rule was no tights and no flight. And as far as I understand, it ends with him being Superman.
The premise always was that they never wanted him in this show to be Superman.
Yeah.
Means they never wanted him to have the costume, and they never wanted him to fly, even though he did float above his bed in episode like 2.
Floated above his bed.
He flies a fair bit more than just that episode.
Yeah, when he had the red ring on, he'd fly a lot.
Yeah, and even this last season, basically, Jor-El basically says to him, it's like, you have the ability. Pretty much, it's like, it's in your head.
Yeah, that he's not
so
gonna fly.
So that's the reason he can't
the
fly.
The flying they did have... It looked amazing. I love the fairly low budget show as it is.
Yeah.
The flying they would have looked really, really good. I liked how insanely fast it looked. It didn't look like he was just kind of, even though he's going fast, like he was just kind of cruising.
Yeah.
Like it looked.
Which is interesting because now he's wearing a black trench coat. He looks like
Neo
/ Superman. And it looks like a bad adaptation of Superman.
Yeah. But he has the S.
So.
Looks like a Tim Burton adaptation.
There's the larger storyline with him versus Zod, who's now on Earth.
Here's a question. Does this show take place in Smallville anymore?
No.
It's all in Metropolis.
It's been in Metropolis for a few seasons.
Yeah, it's
now.
Been in for...
So they just kept the name just for the name of the show.
Yeah, because to change it to Metropolis just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I think viewers would be confused.
Especially because the term Metropolis kind of leads into other, film and television projects. Have nothing to do with Superman.
Yeah, I don't think people. I mean, Metropolis is where Superman is, but they don't.
Yeah,
it's not identified solely to Superman.
Okay.
In the same way, Gotham City is with
Batman.
So. A great show, which I'm probably gonna get killed for, is that I've not watched more than part of episodes. Is 24, which is great, but as far as my time goes,
it's an investment, man. It's such an investment. You gotta
yeah.
really have the time set aside to watch that.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since season 3, So
yeah, and how many are we at?
Season 7.
Yeah, it's, I tried. I couldn't even get past. I couldn't even put enough time aside to watch the first season. So yeah, I can't imagine all the stuff that's been going.
That you have nothing to worry about, because that is, you have to watch that show in sequence to get it.
Yeah,
yeah,
and that means from season 1 to now to really get it.
Yeah.
So
which that's
an undertaking.
Yeah, for the writers, man, to be able to take to do 7 seasons of every single episode, meaning
every season is 24 episodes.
Yeah,
which means every time they renew it, it's like, oh, here's another 24 episodes.
Yeah,
that they have to write out a story and then separate into 24 acts or yep. chapters.
Yeah,
and then separate those chapters into 6 acts.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's extreme.
So my props to the writers of 24.
Yeah,
even though I'm not watching it.
Very cool. Well, thanks for joining us for our 48th podcast. Join us next week. Also, let us know how this format's working. We changed formats up a little bit. If you want to join in with us, you got to let us know to go back to the live version. So
leave us a comment. Leave us comments.
All right. We'll catch you next week.
Take care.